You're listening to The Jay Barker Show on Tide 100.9 in Tuscaloosa.
Welcome to Big News Sports, featuring Lars Anderson, New York Times best-selling author of 12 books and a 20-year veteran of Sports Illustrated. Matt Coulter, a former Alabama Broadcaster of the Year and longtime media personality. And Christian Miller, a national championship-winning linebacker at Alabama who was drafted by the Carolina Panthers. Here's Lars, Matt, and Christian.
Well,
happy St. Patty's Day, Lars.
I don't have any green on. You have a green sweatshirt.
And let me tell you, it was an accident. I mean, I picked it up because it's big, it's comfortable, and it's warm. And by the way, it is green. Back in the days, elementary school and that kind of stuff, it was important. I remember my mother saying, "Oh no, you don't have any green on." And then what if you don't have green on? They pinch you. What a horrible thing to do to a little kid. Somebody gonna pinch you, Lars? Anyway,
I will probably be pinched. Yes.
Do you actively and seek to celebrate St. Patrick's Day?
No,
neither do I. I'm really that way about Cinco de Mayo. Just it brings out a lot of people that aren't normally getting up to speed. You know, brings out the amateurs.
When I lived in New York, it's a big deal because there's a big St. Patty's Day parade. And usually about by noon, this time in New York City, some big dudes are ready to fight. And I want nothing to do with that.
You mean like a big red-headed bearded guy that fights MMA?
Yes. Yeah, they're ready to go.
Yeah, that's when I leave it up to
the bars open at like 4 a.m. in New York. Or like maybe they stay open all night. I'm not sure, but...
They're probably coming out in sunlight.
Yeah.
I've never had a green beer in my life. Have you? I guess you got it.
Yes, I have. Right. Yeah.
Hey, enough of the St. Patty stuff for now. Let's talk about what happened yesterday right here in Alabama. Downtown Birmingham at Legacy Arena. Alabama jumped all over Texas A&M Corpus Christi. We expected that. It was 9-0 literally before you could get comfortable in your seat, which all were full, by the way. And Alabama goes on to win comfortably. I thought the Islanders put up their dukes, you know. They shot the threes. They made a nice little run at the beginning of the second half, but they were clearly overmatched. I mean, there's a reason they're a 16 and Alabama's a 1. But the Tide walks out, 96-75 winners. But I kept checking the app on my phone. Is this right? Brandon Miller, 0. He only took 5 shots. He had some rebounds, a couple of nice assists. But then, Joe, help me. You're right here. He has a groin issue that he suffered during the SEC championship game?
Apparently he played all weekend with a groin issue.
Wow. Well, I mean, it doesn't take a guy, the three of us, to talk about it much. That's painful. Okay, let's just leave it at that. Now, it could actually be the groin muscle, you know, but normally when people think about the groin, they're thinking about that area, you know, and it's difficult to do anything when you have an injury, particularly a significant one.
It didn't look like he was bothered by it.
Me either.
You know, everything is so effortless, right? And I used the phrase the other day with you, there's an economy of motion with him that is extremely rare, and it's like watching a deer run. I mean, it's just like it's perfect, you know, and everything just looks so easy. He makes the difficult a difficult move for 99.999% of the world. To him is just, it's like just drinking a glass of water. You know, it's just, and look, they didn't need him yesterday. You know, he played only 19 minutes, which was a season low for him, as Alabama went on, as we said, to win 96-75. And Coach Oates said that it was post game that Nate Oates said that Brandon is nursing a groin injury that he sustained in the SEC championship game. And but in that game, right, in the SEC championship game, Brandon Miller had 23 points against Texas A&M just on Sunday. But, you know, the extent of the injury, for the most part, Matt, remains unknown, but it's something worth monitoring, right? And certainly when Alabama takes the floor on Saturday against Maryland. And I mentioned yesterday, Maryland's a dangerous team. Maryland's good. That was a great game between Maryland and West Virginia.
It was, but they knocked me out. They gave me my first loss. I'm not happy with the Turtles.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, you could have picked either one of those teams, and you'd just have to take it because that was a great basketball game and literally went down to the last second. And it's a big win for Maryland. I will say this, though, and, you know, you throw rocks if you want to, but I don't think they're any match for Alabama, especially if Brandon Miller is at full speed. So we will see that game Saturday night, and then Auburn will be playing Houston. A Houston team I saw last night that is very beatable right now, and they suffered a huge loss, Lars.
Yeah, they lost one of their most important players, that guard. And it sounds like he's not going to be able to go against Auburn based on what I have been reading. And look, Auburn, they have athletes. They don't have the one sort of shining star on the team.
Well, when
right?
they had Smith and Walker last year.
Yeah, they don't have a
first round NBA
they,
guy.
They don't have a Jabari Smith,
no.
Right? And that's rare. And to have that, and they don't have Brandon Miller, obviously. But I think Auburn's capable of pulling off the upset. I really do.
Well, without Marcus Sasser.
I mean, I don't understand why the NCAA committee did this to Houston. Because they're essentially playing a road game. They're playing a road game in the second round of the NCAA tournament as a one seed. I'm just telling you, it's unfair. Houston should not be in this position because you know how loud it's going to be on Saturday, right? And we've talked at length about how home court advantage in basketball is arguably more important than home court advantage in football.
And there's justification for that.
Yeah.
But
Houston got hosed.
You know, especially now. You know, had they been playing Iowa, no big deal. But I think Auburn's fans showed up in mass. Alabama fans did too. And now they're going to do it all again Saturday night. And they put both those games at night. Now they put TBD beside all these games. Then they get in their little room and say, who's going to bring us the best primetime? Well, guess who's playing primetime? Alabama, Auburn. Well, you could also argue Houston and Maryland.
No, it's Alabama,
it's
Auburn.
Alabama, I mean, Auburn.
You know, this state always, like when it comes to football, right? Birmingham is the capital. It's when it comes to percentage of TVs tuned to an Alabama game or an Auburn game week in and week out, and it's going to be that same dynamic on Saturday night.
They could have the Alabama assistant coaches for football and the Auburn assistant coaches for football play a pickup basketball game, and 10,000 would be there, and you'd get great numbers in the state of Alabama. Then, granted, they're not playing each other, but they're both playing on the same night in the same arena. And that would be the one ticket, right?
Good grief.
I need two if Greg Burns listening. Actually, I need more than that because Lars is going to go. Lars will bring Lincoln. I'll bring my son. Okay. We'll figure this out later. By the way, I will note this again. The UAB is playing Sunday afternoon. I think that's very, very cool against Morehead State. That game, I will be there. One of the other stories, and, you know, there were a lot of the pundits saying Brandon Miller didn't play well yesterday because that cloud was hanging over. Well, you know what? That cloud's been raining on him since January. So I'm not sure I buy into that. Although it is interesting, he had the groin injury this past Sunday. He still lit him up for 23.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, Kai Sears is the other story. The New York Times and Lars did a really, really good thing for radio listeners to this show, to Big Noon Sports. And that's at 12:30. We're going to step aside and get a different vantage point.
Yeah, we're going to talk to Dr. Chris Roberts. He's one of my colleagues at the University of Alabama in the journalism department, Department of Journalism and Creative Media. And Chris specializes in journalism ethics. And he literally wrote the SPJ, which stands for Society of Professional Journalists. There's a code of ethics. And Chris was a contributor to that. And so we are going to talk to him about the New York Times reporting. And in the New York Times, as of now, they're standing by the story that Spears, the walk-on, was present at the time of the shooting, that he was in the car with Brandon Miller when two shots were fired at Miller's car and shattered the window, or I think the front window, sorry, or the back. I'm not sure, but anyway, I do know that again, New York Times as of now standing by the story, but Spears' family came out swinging. Right. And they've accused the New York Times of irresponsible journalism and that and look, the New York Times may have messed with the wrong person because Spears's father, Christian Spears, he's the AD at Marshall in West Virginia. And he said that they are considering a lawsuit. And they're exploring all legal options at this time.
They should.
And the reporter, his last name is Witz. He's a sports writer, a longtime sports writer at the New York Times. And he said that he and the Times were standing by the story, despite these vigorous denials by everyone at Alabama and by the Spears family, but he has not to be quoted by Outkick, Clay Travis's site.
Okay.
But then the New York Times did update the story at 5 p.m. yesterday, only to add denials. Alabama, by Spears, by Spears' dad, and by Spears' attorney. But you know what? The reporter Witz, dude, you got it. Talk to them before you publish.
That should have been a part of the original story. Absolutely.
You got to say that Spears denies this.
This is
such shoddy journalism. I'm going to reserve comment on that and really let Chris handle it.
I have two questions to present to you concerning Sears and then concerning the reporting of this that as a reporter you can answer. On the other side of this break, you're listening to Big Noon Sports.
From T-Town to the Plains, this is Alabama's most in-depth analysis on the SEC. This is Big Noon Sports.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
Rain continues this afternoon, turning colder with temperatures falling through the 50s. For tonight, mostly cloudy, sharply colder, the low at 33. And tomorrow, mostly cloudy, breezy, and very cool, behind the middle 50s at 54. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 54 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
Here we go. Back on Big Noon Sports, Lars, Christian, Matt. Joe is producing our show today. Many thanks to you, Joe. And you precede us on Cuppa. Can we just call it Cuppa?
You can call it whatever you want.
I call it good radio. How about if I call it that?
Might be too far.
It is so evident.
What were the topics that you discussed today? What were your listeners interested in?
I always talk about what I'm interested in, Lars. I was interested in the basketball. I had Blake Byler on from Bama Central and Crimson White. So I had him on for about 20 minutes, and then we talked about all the chaos in the South region. And then we talked about Tony Mitchell, and that was pretty much the extent of it.
Yeah, we hadn't hit on Tony Mitchell yet, in case you weren't listening in the previous hour. A signee and early enrollee, Tony Mitchell, who played outstanding football at Thompson High School, arrested for possession of marijuana, handgun, and cash down in Bonifay, Florida, which is right on the Alabama-Florida line, on your way to the beach. Or on your way back, as I was on Sunday. All right, Christian, I want to ask a couple more questions concerning this Kai Sears story. But first of all, just your thoughts on Alabama winning without Brandon Miller scoring a single point.
Well, I think, you know, we've seen the capabilities of this team without him. There's been times where he hasn't necessarily produced the way we expect him to, and the team just finds a way to still be efficient and to get things done, and that's what we saw. And I think that just goes to show you that, you know, this is a team that you definitely don't want to play, because their best player can be held scoreless and they still can beat you tremendously. Granted, obviously, you know, they probably were playing a lesser opponent, but still, we've seen in the regular season that, you know, without Brandon Miller, they're still able to be highly effective on offense. They still play great defense. So I think that just goes to show you that this Alabama team is a very dangerous team.
I'll tell you what, and they brought it out on the CBS broadcast, which, by the way, I think they did a really, really nice job. Did you notice where they put Wimp on press row? Right behind Nance. Isn't that right?
That was my seat.
That was your seat?
That was my seat.
You telling me that they had favoritism sort of towards the mugshot of Wimp over yours?
Oh, no. Wimp gave me his ticket, and he asked to sit in the Tide 109 seat. I said, sure.
And then he was like messing around with Grant, and they were putting and something. He didn't realize it was on television. Anyway, it was quite funny. And every time they cut to side court with the announcers, there was Wimp. But, Lars, I wanted to ask you about this. Sears, this is Kai, okay? His father is the AD at We Are Marshall.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think the New York Times even did enough background check to think and look to find that out and go, man, maybe I ought to get that second source?
Yeah. It appears that it was very rushed. And
you know what happens when you get in a hurry?
You make mistakes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
My other question, and we just grazed on this yesterday. And the more I think about it, and the more rushed and the lack of sources, is there a chance that New York Times just got duped?
Like somebody set them up.
Yeah. Like somebody said, hey, I'm a sheriff's deputy from so-and-so, and they were so rushed.
That's why you don't go with a single source, a single anonymous source. Never.
I mean, it could have been the guy holding the umbrella at the intersection when we were coming through here that just managed to get a phone number for the New York Times and call these people up. Am I just kind of out there with that thought?
Well, the problem, though, is after they write that article, then there's all these responding articles of according to the and New then York it Times. Just spreads like wildfires.
Yeah, that's
and
a great
then, and then what happens is they put themselves in a bad position too, because, you know, the Alabama, you know, writers are writing it too, saying sources say, or, you know, yeah. And then it's like just spreading. I'm like, see?
Yeah, and a lot of the AL.com writers I saw were taking a lot of flack over social media because they had simply stated what was already being reported. Right, and in the eyes of the fans, it's like they're as culpable as the New York Times, when in fact they're not. I mean, they're just.
But they're in Alabama. Could they not reach out to somebody here in the, whether it's the legal system here? Could they not reach out to the sheriff's department, whoever they need to reach out to here, and do their own due diligence? Say, hey, we just read a report from the New York Times. Do you want to comment? Is there anything like that? That's all I'm saying. I'm not putting all the blame on them, but I'm just I read, I think it was that Chase Goodbread had wrote, and he was saying, like, people, he was trying to defend the media because a lot of people are mad at the media. And he also was, you know, holding the media accountable at the same time, but I'm like, you have to understand what people are saying was, and this is more so about the Brandon Miller thing.
Okay.
But what they were getting at was, I think people are just to the point where they're like, the issue is when you spread false narratives or inaccurate narratives, that's the problem. It's not that you're writing about it, like you're doing your job, but when you're spreading these false narratives, you're painting a picture. Like, the power is in the pen, so what you're writing has power. That's the problem with the media. Nobody's saying, oh, it's the media. They're all wrong. But when you spread those narratives that are inaccurate, things like this can happen.
Well, but if you're going to respond to it, and you're going to do your own due diligence, and you're going to get the University of Alabama, which issued a very strong statement yesterday.
Good.
In order to do the story, you're going to have to mention where it originated.
Yeah, I was really struck by how vigorous the denials were.
Way to go, Greg Byrne.
Greg Byrne and the Spears family. And Christian, his dad, Christian Spears. Again, like, this guy has had a lot of experience in dealing with the media. He's the athletic director at Marshall. And if you are going to say something about his son that is inaccurate, this dude has the power to come after you.
And he should. I would do the same thing. I'd come after everybody. I mean,
can I sue him just for making me angry?
I mean, think about Matt. Like, if somebody came after your son, Matt, or somebody came after my son, Lincoln.
Well, there would be an official statement.
Corey Miller.
I was about to say, when Tim started talking a little reckless on here, when I asked a simple question, my dad's first thing my dad called you said, why you let him talk to you like that?
Yeah.
My dad don't play that. That's why I told you I had to get off. If my dad was like that just because the guy's tone on a radio show, I can only imagine how my dad would feel. Some idiot for the New York Times wrote something about me. And
you're being nice when you just call him an idiot. I think this guy's gone. I think his journalistic career, he just exploded it. But let me ask you something.
We still don't know.
Yeah,
I mean, the truth will eventually come out.
What do we know, Lars? The guy who is the subject is saying, like, this is 100% inaccurate. What else is there to know? I mean, you're saying the basketball guy could be lying?
All I'm saying is this is going to be adjudicated in court, in a court of law.
But here's the deal. I think Alabama, and there'll be people that don't necessarily agree with me.
The reporter, it should be noted, the reporter, whose last name is Witz.
What's the first name? Put him out there. Air him out.
Witz.
As of right now, he's standing by the story.
What is he standing by? The guy he wrote about. Lars. That's like me telling you. I was telling people Lars was in Tuscaloosa yesterday.
Witz.
From my knowledge, you weren't here.
Billy Witz is the name of the reporter. Yeah.
They're standing by it.
I mean, but of course the Times is going to stand by it. Because if you don't stand by it, you're really opening yourself up. Because the die has been cast, right? If you're the New York Times, like, an apology, yes, if you want to try to do everything in your power to avoid a lawsuit, issue a retraction. But the
is
Times.
Is it too late?
I think it is. The damage has been done. That's what I mean by the die has been cast.
The damage has been done.
And it takes a lot for a publication like the New York Times or like a Sports Illustrated back in the day to actually come out and say, oops, we made a mistake.
But no, they just throw the writer under the bus because he's the one that made the mistake.
But it's the whole process.
What do you? I don't understand.
But it's not just the writer. It's the editor, and it's the policies of the paper. I mean, it's much bigger than just the writer.
No, right? I understand that, but I'm saying it. But if I'm head at the New York Times, I'm saving my own tail, and I'm saying, look,
you're throwing everybody out.
Well, I'm saying who else, whoever oversaw it, whoever proofread it or whatever, let him put it out. Like, because again, we're talking about accountability. That's what it boils down to.
You know, so, we need to ask
Dr. Chris Roberts.
He's coming up on Big Noon Sports.
From T-Town to the plane, this is Alabama's most in-depth analysis on the SEC. This is Big Noon Sports.
This is Reagan, owner of R&R Cigars, the Cigar Mansion in downtown Tuscaloosa. Located at 2703 6th Street across from the Home 2 Suites. Come down to R&R and see why we're the ultimate cigar and bourbon experience. With over 165 bourbons and 5 private barrels, our selection of bourbon is unmatched. We have the best cocktails around and our cigar selection is legendary. Our lounge and service are world class. Come and experience the luxury of the mansion and see why it's a world-renowned cigar and spirits destination.
The children's music and dance teacher who couldn't cha-cha. I was always on my feet. It was just so painful. Elisa couldn't let her students down. So she stepped up and went to the Good Feet store for personally fitted arch supports. I would work an entire day and my feet didn't hurt at the end of the day. That was when I knew, wow, these are different. But the really good part, it's good to be dancing together again. Stop by or schedule your free fitting at goodfeet.com.
Rainy, overcast day in Alabama. And chilly, too. Just not very March-like. It is March Madness, though, and we're talking a lot about that on Big Noon Sports. I'm Matt Coulter, along with Christian Miller and Lars Anderson.
Our next guest is a good friend of mine and colleague, Dr. Chris Roberts at the University of Alabama. Chris has... He actually wrote the textbook that I have used in my class when I've taught media ethics.
It's called
Doing Ethics in Media, Theories and Practical Applications. And Chris also has contributed to literally writing the SPJ Code of Ethics, and that is the Society of Professional Journalists. Chris, how are you doing today, my friend?
I am doing just fine. Rainy in Tuscaloosa, too.
Yes, sir. Okay, so we wanted to get you on to discuss the New York Times story and just what is, you know, your analysis of what's happened. We spent the previous segment kind of setting it up, and I know you're familiar with the story. The New York Times writer came out and said that Spears, the player, the walk-on at Alabama, was in the car with Brandon Miller at the time of the shooting. And in Spears and his father, who is the athletic director at Marshall and the University of Alabama, have all vigorously denied this. Now, there's a lot to dig into here, but what are your first thoughts about the reporting by the Times and the just everything that's going on?
First of all, I will say I'm not an expert on this case. Second of all, as a former journalist, I have seen Bear Bryant in his underpants going back to a 1980s football game. I'm old school sports writer. Oh, yeah. My first question is, if he wasn't there, where was he? They have not said yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which car? I read that in the article the other day, and it looked like he was in one car and then another. And by the way, I don't think he was in either one of them. It's probably someone else.
Yeah.
But what?
The story has some serious flags are waving about this story, but I would like to know where was he? They said he wasn't there. Where was he? That's just the folks could solve this pretty quickly with one answer.
And,
good point.
Okay, and then he the Times, I found this rather extraordinary. At the end of the story, and I hadn't seen them ever do this before. There was a note from the Times that says, what we consider before using anonymous sources. Do the sources know the information? What's their motivation for telling us? Have they proved reliable in the past? Can we corroborate the information? Even with these questions satisfied, the Times uses anonymous sources as a last resort. The reporter and at least one editor know the identity of the source. Not sources, source. So this is a single source, single anonymous source.
Yeah.
What?
As far as we know.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're essentially saying that the Times is essentially confessing that there's this, just a single anonymous source.
Yes. I'm troubled by that as well. I know that there have been some other journalists in Tuscaloosa. I think you may have had Ryan Phillips from Patch on your show before, who had mentioned that there had been talk about this, but he didn't have enough to nail it yet. I saw that on his social media the last couple of days after this story came out. So it's not like other people didn't think this. It's the New York Times was the first to report it.
And
whether they're right or not, I don't know.
Okay, but then let's go back just to the ethics of it. If you were the editor of at the Times and your reporter brings you this information, single source, won't go on the record or won't put his name on the record or her name on the record, do you publish?
You know, there is a routine that the New York Times and all legitimate news organizations do to confirm that the information is solid. I mean, this is the New York Times putting its reputation against the rest of the world, and you either have to trust them or not. And the process of who is, you know, somebody has to know who it is, and the editor has to know who it is, and the reporter has to persuade the editor and people above that editor that this source is accurate, has information that's verifiable, and that there's a reason to leave this person to provide confidentiality to that person. So the story explains why confidentiality was granted. And at that point, the New York Times has to trust the reporter and trust that source. And that's scary in any situation. I think even more so in the case that I don't know this reporter, never met him, don't know how he would know people. In my career as a journalist and in dealing with anonymous sources, I had to know who that person was and had to have generally dealt with that person before. So was somebody yanking the New York Times chain and providing evidence? I don't know. But all we can do is either trust the New York Times or not that this information is accurate. And that's tough.
Dr. Chris Roberts is our guest on Big Noon Sports. The New York Times is not the only news organization with a really, really great reputation. It has been, I guess, but that has gone with stories with one unnamed source. It seems to be a lot more common than it was when you were at Anniston, when I was at 13. How has it decayed like this? Are we not teaching them right or what?
Well, we teach them not to use anonymous sources unless there's an absolutely reason to not do it. And then going to the SPJ's code of ethics, you know, you have to identify the source. If you're going to provide confidentiality and anonymity, you've got to understand their motives for it. And then be sure that you've reached out to the people who can provide information. You know, you reach out to the families and to the university and to others, which this reporter did. It doesn't necessarily say that you have to have two anonymous sources. You certainly want another person who can check behind this stuff and get independent sourcing. And again, I've heard some in the community reporters who've said that they've heard from independent people. Doesn't mean that they know because two people talk to each other. But I don't know if this is I don't think 70 years ago you had to have two anonymous sources, if that's what you're saying, Matt.
Yeah, the bare minimum threshold at Sports Illustrated for the 20 years I was there is that you had to have two sources. I mean, we just wouldn't run with it unless there
preferably
was
one named.
Preferably one named. Yes. Chris, another question is Kai Spears a freshman walk-on who has not played at all this season? Is he a public figure? And can you explain to our listeners why that is important, the distinction between a public figure and a private citizen?
That goes back to the New York Times and another piece of Alabama in the 1960s. The New York Times was sued in Alabama in a case called New York Times versus Sullivan, in which L.B. Sullivan, the police commissioner of Montgomery, was not named in an ad, not a story, but an ad, and there were some factual errors in that ad. He sued the New York Times and won in Alabama court, $300,000, went to the Supreme Court, which in 1965 ruled unanimously that news organizations need some space to make mistakes when they are talking about things that are of public interest and importance. And so the New York Times Sullivan standard was created, and there are public figures, people who are the president and Madonna and guys on sports talk radio, others who are public figures. And so a journalist can be sued by these people, but there's a very high standard. It takes a lot for a public figure to win a libel lawsuit. For a private figure, if you say something about my mother having herpes, for example, and all she has to do is prove that you were wrong, you know, and she was identified. So the question you're asking is Kai a public or a private figure? And the answer is a jury determines that. You can be a public or a private. He may well be what they call a vortex public figure, where you are a public figure when it comes to Alabama athletics, but private in other things of your life. And each case is different. Each case has strict scrutiny, and you just can't say in this case which way a judge or a jury would rule. How's that for a non-answer, guys?
No, that was really good.
There was good facts in there. Unfortunately, and I think Lars knows this, you know, when it gets to that, if you're a public figure, then you have to prove malice and actual damages. And it, Dr. Roberts, isn't that where it really gets difficult?
Well, I think, assuming in this case that Kai would be a public figure, he would have to prove that the story, that there was malice, or they just didn't care. And I don't think the reporter, I mean, in the case of the story, you see where the reporter reached out and spoke to him, tried to speak to the university and did the work that you do to show that you're trying to get more information. No one really would comment for this. So he's kind of left out there on his own. And, you know, as a journalist, just because people won't talk to you, people in power won't talk to you, doesn't mean you don't do a story. So I don't think there is, as a public figure, it would be difficult to win this case, it seems to me. Now, I'm not a lawyer, never even played one on television, but the story itself shows that the reporter went through the steps trying to get additional information before publishing.
And just based on everything you have read, including the fact that Kai's dad, Christian, is the athletic director at Marshall, and he already said that they're looking into hiring a lawyer, and or I think they have a lawyer already, and looking into the possibility of filing a suit, and just the terminology that's being used in these different statements, like a reckless disregard for the truth. Does it feel to you that this is going to be heading toward litigation?
I have no idea. I know that the reporter reached out to the athletic director before the story was published, which again shows that there was not malice or not caring about whether it was true or not. He didn't get a comment. Alabama law, assuming this case is in Alabama, when you threaten a libel lawsuit, you typically write a lawyer letter saying you have 5 days to retract this. And if the news organization retracts the information, then there is no punitive damages.
Oh,
there can, yeah. So if the official letter shows up the Times is on the clock to say either to stand by the story or to say we messed up. And if that's the case, that they do retract it, there's not punitive damages. There can be compensatory damages and damages that he can show that really affect his finances, but you can't punish the Times if they back off.
Again, one more time. If you were the editor at the Times and the reporter comes to you with this story, single anonymous source, do you publish?
Man.
You dumped it.
I don't know. I don't have enough information to answer that. I'm sorry, Lars.
Wow.
I know. You're right. There's a ton more that you need to know, right? Yeah. You need to know exactly who the source is. Well, for us journalism geeks, this will be very interesting to follow.
As we go to break, thank you, Dr. Roberts. The one thing you asked initially that is just of vital importance, where was he? All you got to do is just say, hey, he was over at such and such. He was over at somebody's house, you know, having breakfast.
But we messed up, Matt, because Chris did lead with he saw Bear Bryant in his underwear.
Yeah.
Where did you see Bear Bryant in his underwear?
I don't even want to know the answer to that.
It was 1982, I think it was, at an Alabama at Georgia Tech game in September. It was really, really, really hot that hot September afternoon, and I walked into the locker room back in the days when you could actually interview anybody you wanted to in the locker room. I walk in, a college, you know, high school senior, turn right and think, wow, there's a guy in his underpants. Hey, that's Bear Bryant. Hey, he wears boxers.
So he's a boxer guy, not briefs.
Wow. All right,
good to know.
He was a boxer man, yeah.
What outstanding reporter.
Where else can you find that information?
Other than Big Noon Sports, I don't know. Dr. Roberts, thank you. Good talking to you.
Thank you, Chris.
My pleasure, guys. Thank
you. Wow.
Great segment.
It was a great segment, but I hope people carry away more than Coach Bryant in his underwear.
Covering SEC sports like kudzu on the roadside. This is Big Noon Sports.
You've probably seen their clothing around town on game days. Check out Christopher Mobley on the Strip. Luxury game day apparel redefined. It's the only place in town where you can find Tide Hoops apparel. Clothing designed for the modern day entrepreneur, golf enthusiast, and athleisure fanatic. They've got Peter Millar, Fiore, Grayson, and Mizzen & Main. And if you haven't tried the Mizzen & Main dress shirts, you've got to. You can find them at 1410 University Boulevard on the Strip. Also, they've got a great e-commerce site at ChristopherMobley.shop. So check out Christopher Mobley. Luxury game day apparel redefined.
The story of the nurse and the foot pain that nearly brought him down.
I feel like I'm giving people their lives back.
Robert lived to take care of his patients, but he couldn't do it unless he took care of his foot pain.
I have plantar fasciitis. It'll almost put you on your knees. That's how much it hurts.
His own recovery started when he got fitted for arch supports at the Goodfeet store.
Now that I'm pain-free, I can make these people feel better.
Can't beat that. Stop by or schedule your free fitting at goodfeet.com.
In Birmingham, Alabama.
We are here treating patients from every generation
across the United States
and from around the world.
We're here for the rookies
and the dreamers
trying to make a name for themselves.
We are here for the achievers
who are resilient
and won't take no for an answer.
We're here for the coaches,
athletic trainers, and mentors
who are shaping the next generation of legends.
We are here for you,
aggressively pursuing victory over injury.
Learn more at andrewsportsmedicine.com.
Road tripping, business travel, or bringing your car in for repairs. All great reasons to rent a Toyota at Tuscaloosa Toyota. You can rent the latest Toyota models for a day, a week, or a weekend. Every Toyota rental car comes with 24 hours roadside assistance and is backed by an entire team of people you know and trust. Rent a Toyota and let's go places. Reserving yours is a breeze at TuscaloosaToyota.com.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
Rain continues this afternoon, turning colder with temperatures falling through the 50s. For tonight, mostly cloudy, sharply colder, the low at 33. And tomorrow, mostly cloudy, breezy, and very cool, the high in the middle 50s at 54. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 52 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
A national championship team covering a national championship team. The best sports talk in the state. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
Every once in a while. No. More often than not, I just want to go, could we put this in the corner and just play basketball? Just watch Wimp give golf lessons on national TV. Watch Brandon Miller not score. And because it's just such a great. By the way, I got to tell you guys, bracket 13-3, including the upset call for Furman. Pretty proud of
that. Let's talk about that Furman game. All right.
Oh, God.
Christian.
Worst pass.
Was that the worst pass in the history of passes?
You know, from my eyes, yes, but I don't have the most basketball experience or knowledge, so I don't want to.
Well, did he look goofy to you?
Well, it is.
Strange, or?
This is what it looked like to me. He was in a flurry. I mean, again, they're playing in the tournament. All the lights are on him. There's big stakes. You know, the time's running out. They just got to play keep away almost. And to me, he made a rash decision, you know, in the spur of the moment. And I get it. You know, for everybody that's watching it, it's like, what are you doing? But again, as an athlete, I just put myself in his shoes. I'm like, man, I feel bad for him. The guy really was just kind of flustered and thought, oh, my teammate's down at the other end. You know, let me just get it to him. The time will run out.
I mean, after the game, after the game, I don't know if you guys saw this, but after the game, Furman's best player, Jalen Slauson, who's the Southern Conference Player of the Year, he was just in disbelief walking to the locker room, and he's yelling, he just freaking threw it. He just freaking threw it. Like, he couldn't even believe it. Right, I mean, just a look of utter befuddlement on his face.
Well, see, I didn't pay attention to, like, the other factors. So, like, could he have just held the ball and they could have fouled him? Or, like, did he have
what I would have done. Now, yeah. Not that I'd played that competitively, but.
If you worded that
cover
way.
Cover up.
Yeah, if you worded that way, then that was pointless. The deal. I didn't know if he had to get rid of it or something.
And Virginia had a timeout. They had a timeout.
Oh,
and
so, I thought they were both out. Yeah, see, I didn't know these things.
So, Khalil Clark. Or Ki Clark, he was trapped, right, by two Furman defenders on the baseline underneath Furman's basket or just to the right of it as you're looking at it. Mm-hmm. And, instead of calling that last time out, the senior guard for Virginia just blindly heaved the ball down the court in an effort to apparently eat clock, right? But then Furman's Garrett Hein, he corralled a loose ball near midcourt. He throws a pass to a teammate who drills a three-pointer with on the right wing. 2.2 seconds to go. Furman was down two. Suddenly they're up one. And that will probably be the most improbable victory of this entire NCAA tournament.
What about Princeton? That was a 15 beating a 2, which happens almost every year. Actually, I heard or read a survey that a 15 beating a 2 in the NCAA tournament happens 1.1 time per tournament.
Wow.
So you gotta pick a 15 somewhere along the line. I didn't pick Princeton, did y'all?
No.
I don't think I chose either.
You hate Princeton because you're a Columbia man.
Yeah. Right.
Next hour, Mike Rodak talking Bama basketball.
100.9 Tuscaloosa weather.
Rain continues this afternoon, turning colder with temperatures falling through the 50s. For tonight, mostly cloudy, sharply colder, below at 33. And tomorrow, mostly cloudy, breezy, and very cool, behind the middle 50s at 54. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 52 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
WTUG HD2 Northport and W265 CG Tuscaloosa. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
Welcome back to Big Noon Sports with Lars Anderson, Matt Coulter, and Christian Miller.
Welcome to the program, Christian Miller, Lars Anderson, Matt Coulter. Big round of applause. Golf clap for Joe. What, why is that? Well, why did patrons, the gallery, why do they do that? Instead of just doing like they do on the 16th at Phoenix and just going an absolute drunken uproar. All right, that question really isn't important. It just kind of flew off. Let's talk basketball. Last night, yesterday afternoon, actually, Alabama defeated Texas A&M Corpus Christi, the Islanders, by a score of 96-75. Brandon Miller went scoreless. Auburn, meanwhile, stepped up, beat a very pesky, physical Iowa Hawkeyes team by a score of 83-75. And then there were all the other brackets. And then there are games going on right now. Michigan State, and the one we're watching here, is leading USC 66-51. The Spartans are a 7 seed. The Trojans are a 10. So, that being said, we're going to talk some basketball. And we're going to take some phone calls. And you can dial us up right now at 205-342-9904. And you can also listen through our website at bignoonsports.com and follow us on Twitter at Big Noon Sports. But right now, we are going to go to you're going to operate that for me. We're all in the same studio, I think, for the first time in 6 months.
Yes.
Which is good. It's good to see your smiling faces.
By the way, I do know the history of the golf club.
We'll get into that later. Steve. You do? Yeah. Okay. I want to know. Steve's in Tuscaloosa joining us on our affiliate, Tide 100.9. How you doing?
How you doing, guys?
Great.
Matt, I got to tell you, it's been a while. You have to forgive me. I've been shopping for a long box. And I finally found one.
Yeah, to get you up at 10:50.
Yeah, you know, the one I had just played right out. And I can't live like that. I gotta have a workable alarm clock. Listen, all I wanted to tell you was, a couple weeks ago when you had Tom Bank on, that was very cool. the St. Louis Cardinals, no fees. St. Louis Cardinals.
Yeah.
Is that what they were?
Yeah. Yeah.
They were, you know, back in the day, you know, people in this area, well, not people, I can only speak for myself, was a diehard Dallas Cowboys fan. And they gave the Cowboys all kind of fit. And I remember hating the Cardinals. Dan Dierdorf, Terry Metcalf,
yeah.
Jim Hart, you know, they were the thorn in the Cowboys' side. But I remember thinking Terry Metcalf might very well be the best running back I ever saw until I ran into Barry Sanders, and that ended all that. But I just wanted to tell you how much I enjoyed that interview. That was. That Tom Bake seems like a fine fellow.
Oh, he is so good.
Well, he just made for a great interview, and that's really all I wanted to tell you. It's been a couple of weeks, but to this day, I don't know that you've had a better interview.
Well, I think that comes first and foremost because of him, what kind of person he is. I still maintain he has the greatest laugh in the history of entertainment. It's hysterical. I used to go visit him at a little pub, and we would sit there, and he would tell me stories for hours. And one of these days, man. I'll get him back on and let him tell you about the drive against the Dallas Cowboys, which I'll call you and let you listen because it's a fascinating story. Steve, thanks for your time.
Yep. I appreciate it, Matt.
Good luck on the alarm clock. See, for those that don't know, Steve's the one that calls in and says he doesn't get up until 11:50, and that's just to listen to the show.
Yes.
You need that kind of person.
He is our number one guy.
Top dog. Jeez.
Yeah.
The golf club.
The golf club. It goes all the way back to 1783. Right in Aberdeen, Scotland, and you know the game was created in Scotland, and the Aberdeen Code of 1783 decreed that, quote, while a stroke is playing, no one of the party shall walk about, make any motion, or attempt to take off the player's attention by speaking or otherwise. So that was the first call for quiet in golf. Right. And then the game starts to spread. It comes to the United States. And in 1895, the virtue of silence was at the very top of when the U.S. GA put down its very first set of rules. And it said, The following customs belong to the established etiquette of golf and should be observed by all golfers. One, no player, caddy, or onlooker should move or talk during a stroke. And then went on to say, on the occasion of friendly matches between neighboring clubs, great care ought always to be taken to prevent ignorant onlookers from inopportunely moving about or speaking to the players. And then it went on to the golf clap. Generally, a clap seems to be one of the least intrusive methods of recognizing a good shot. So it makes sense that light applause would be encouraged over shouting, cheering, or sudden movements.
Instead of that guy that always yell.
Is it all? Yeah. Yeah, Baba Booey. What is the, when Tiger would always tee off, it would be, it's in the hole, I think.
Yeah. And that would be on a par five.
Yeah.
From the tee box.
Or no, you know, get in the hole.
Yeah. I still think you hear this, and it's more likely to happen in the South, but you'll hear a roll tide with Justin Thomas.
Oh, yeah.
And they're noticeable and loud. And it's not like he walks over there and autographs a ball for him. But he occasionally will acknowledge.
So one time Jay and I were talking about the craziest place you've heard of Roll Tide. And for me, I was on the Great Wall of China and I freaking heard a Roll Tide. It was way like in the background, but I was on top of the wall walking.
No way.
Yeah. And I wasn't even living in Alabama at the time. I was living in New York.
This is before you moved here.
Yeah. Yeah. I just heard a random Roll Tide on the Great Wall of China.
So obviously you didn't encourage it because.
No, I wasn't.
You can yell a Roll Tide just about any place on this planet.
It was two Alabama people and one of them saw that they're wearing Alabama gear. On the Great Wall of China.
I think it's a pretty large coincidence.
How about you?
I don't know. Christian, golf clap for you. Where's the
craziest place?
You were in national championship games. You ever been in a different setting and heard a Roll Tide? Or even seen a Roll Tide shirt?
Well, I mean, the only times I've really traveled way out, like when I went to Mexico, it was through like the Crimson Tide cruise. Yeah, so I mean, obviously we're going to hear Roll Tides because we're on a cruise full of Alabama fans, and it was a group of former Alabama players. So they're seeing all the Alabama stuff.
Did you enjoy that cruise?
Absolutely. That was one of the most fun vacations.
Really?
We went to college.
I've heard some players not enjoy it all that much.
Why? Because they pay you to go on a cruise. How could you not enjoy that? I got paid to go to Mexico.
Just
everything included.
Like the lack of privacy, maybe.
You know what's funny? I was kind of, I mean, y'all can tell by now, I'm a very private person. I was a little worried about that. I'll be honest. The fans were amazing. They didn't bother us. Like, and I think they probably, you know, kind of went over with them. Like, hey, like, obviously in settings, like when it's like big events and stuff, yeah, like interact with the guys. Like, that's what we're there for. But like, if you see them with their families, cause we're permitted to bring our families with us.
Awesome.
So, yeah. And so, obviously, they were very respectful of that. Like, yeah. if we weren't in like an event or a big setting like that, and we were like, you know, on an excursion, or we were eating with they might just wave or not, like, but so respectful, didn't bother, because they knew there was times when like they could come ask for autographs. There was plenty of opportunities for that, and everybody was very respectful of that. And I'll say, I don't know if COVID happened, and then they kind of put it on hold. But if it's back up and running, I highly recommend you go on it.
I mean, do it again?
Absolutely. I mean,
it
was so much
fun. Family, like your kids.
Yeah. Matt could be your dad. No, Matt could be grandpa, and I'll be
uncle.
Hey, you know,
Uncle Lars.
Yeah. You know what? Right here, Lars. Here you go. Glad we're not YouTubing. Granddads.
Yeah, so much fun though, guys. Really, it really is so much fun.
You know why? And I'm pretty strong about this thought. Because Alabama fans get it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they understand and they respect what you did on the field, what you did for them.
Mm-hmm.
And by golly, if you're over there eating with your mom, they'll leave you alone.
Mm-hmm.
And another big part of that is the fact that we're south of the Mason-Dixon line. That's what Southerners do.
You want to hear something funny about it, though?
I want to hear all about it.
All right, so it's funny enough, it was around February. So a lot of guys that went brought their girlfriends. You know, it was like, you know, kind of like a Valentine's Day timing thing. Well, this is so funny. Probably half the guys that went on the cruise with girlfriends ended up breaking up. The relationships did not last.
New girlfriends.
Well, here's the thing. It wasn't like right after the cruise everybody got, you know, split up.
During?
But no. It was just like, if you look back on it, like 6 months later, like a lot of us were not in those relationships anymore. I remember we all kind of were like, damn, what did that cruise do to our relationship?
It's a relationship test.
It opened up a larger sea.
No offense to our fans, but no, I mean, there's a bunch of families and stuff on this cruise. So, okay. I'm sure our fans are beautiful and whatnot, but it wasn't one of those crews, man. I know it was very family oriented. I could see where you're going, but wasn't
even. Get off the ship.
Even when we were, I'll be honest, Cozumel and Yucatan, where we went.
Beaches, all that kind of stuff.
It wasn't everything was so, you know, tourist designed that it was just, it wasn't that. You would think that, Matt, it wasn't that. For whatever reason, I think it just caused some friction. Yeah.
But the cruise was great. You're living together for the first time in like maybe the first time in a very tight space.
You know what I think it was too though? I mean, in a setting like that, it's a very honeymoon-esque feel, right? Like everything you're on the ocean. And I think it either makes or breaks you, because I think it starts altering people's expectations, because they see that and it's like, they're ready for the, you know, I think some of us were just like, oh man, that's
right. Okay. So, ready for a ring.
Did anybody on that cruise end up getting married?
One of the fans proposed.
Oh, that's cool.
There was like a planned proposal by a fan. It was really cool, but it was, man, we played like Jeopardy with everybody on the cruise. We did all sorts of like fun, activities. And I lost a lot of money gambling. Not a lot of money. I lost a couple thousand dollars. To me, that's a lot of money, but yeah.
It's a whole lot of money.
Yeah. Lost a couple thousand dollars gambling, but, other than that, like I said, the cruise was great. Highly recommend it.
What'd you gamble? Did you play,
It was no, it, the guys that play blackjack always win. This is my biggest mistake.
I played blackjack.
I played roulette.
Christian.
Listen,
worst odds.
No, I don't think we have enough time, but came up with a little strategy that I thought worked, because the first night I won like $500 with this new strategy. And the strategy was just bet on a color or, you know, odd or even, and just keep doubling it until you win. It worked the first night. Well, second day, I lost that.
Money? At what point? Yeah.
Yeah.
You keep losing and you're just
You know where I messed up? I didn't realize there's a limit on how much you can bet. And that's where I got screwed. Yeah. Ooh. There's a limit. Yeah, yeah. And then once I realized,
yeah, what you lost back.
That's right.
I see.
Hey, yeah.
Let's talk some Bama basketball on the other side of the break with AL.com's Mike Rodak.
Covering SEC sports like kudzu on the roadside. This is Big Noon Sports.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
Rain continues this afternoon, turning colder with temperatures falling through the 50s. For tonight, mostly cloudy, sharply colder, the low at 33. And tomorrow, mostly cloudy, breezy, and very cool, the high in the middle 50s at 54. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 51 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
The best sports talk in the state. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
I promise we are going to jump back on the cruise ship here at the bottom of the hour. I mean, it sparked more conversation in the studio. Now people are calling in asking about it. So we'll get to those calls, and Christian will give you more of a first-hand report of what goes on with these cruises, which actually just sounds fun. I've never been on one. You got neither, right?
It sounds more fun than whale watching.
Look, no, you can do both. You can go on the cruise and you can whale. You can do your whale watch. It's perfect for you. You can whale watch on the cruise.
There you go.
And playing putt-putt.
And it sounds great.
Yeah.
Playing putt-putt.
Yeah, they got that too.
Mike Rodak from AL.com probably doesn't want to enter this conversation, but we'll ask him to join us anyway. He of course covers the University of Alabama, and that includes basketball here last night, actually yesterday afternoon. Mike, it's the gang here. I'm going to jump right into a question because you follow it as closely as anyone. At what point did we find out that Brandon Miller had a groin injury?
It was last Monday, this past Monday, 4 days ago, where, you know, Oates does his radio show every Monday night and kind of mentioned it in passing where, you know, Brandon was claiming with a groin injury, I think is basically what he said. It kind of shows how tough he was. And that was really the extent of the quote. And it sounds like it happened either during the game Sunday against A&M or before the game, maybe. And you know, he played through it. It's not like it seemed to be anything that truly bothered him. Even like today, we've kind of been talking among ourselves, like, can any of you guys notice, like, does it seem like he's running wrong or limping or anything? It doesn't really seem that way. But you know, it's probably at least affecting him a little bit. And that's kind of what Nate said after the game yesterday, where he only played 19 minutes. And, you know, Brandon actually pushed back against that in the locker room. Brandon kind of said, you know, I seemed like he could have played more. I don't think Brandon was totally, saying that he didn't play much in the second half because of the injury. But I'm sure if they need him to play a bunch of minutes against Maryland tomorrow, I think he'll be okay to do that.
Yeah, he to me, it looked like he was running just fine. But do you think, is there a correlation between the injury and 0 points? And also, I mean, this is what, you know, people are writing about across the country. It's it is finally the weight of everything off the court getting heavy for him.
I think as far as the injury at the point, I think probably to some degree, you know, it might affect his shot or affect, it didn't seem like maybe he was driving the ball quite as much. He was 0-for-3 from three. I think it also plays into, if you're being limited minutes wise, there's going to be less time on the floor to score points. I think if he had played 25 or 30 minutes, he probably would have scored points. And then, you know, just the way the game went too, you know, a 20 point lead most of the time, you don't really need to play him. So it all kind of bakes into it. I don't know if it's, you know, completely, you know, black and white sort of answer, but as far as, you know, how much the situation affects him, I don't think so, just because, you know, there's been a lot of games since it came out and he's been unaffected by it. You know, the first game after, obviously the South Carolina game, it didn't seem like it affected him at all. You know, cumulatively, does the weight, like you said, kind of weigh on him? Possibly. I just don't sense it with him. I don't think that's, he doesn't seem to be built that way. It seems like he's taking it fine from a mental standpoint. It very well could have been just physical.
Did anybody shock you yesterday that had a big game that you weren't expecting to?
Not shocked, but I think for Noah Clowney to go, I think he started 3-for-4 from three. A guy who, you know, has definitely struggled from three this year. There's been a few good games here and there, but not a guy who's, you know, you expect to go 3-for-4 to start a game from three, and that helped them. And Mark Sears, for that matter. I mean, Mark Sears has been in the slump too, and combined they went 6-for-8 in the first half from three, and that really kind of, I don't say put the game away, but with Brandon not scoring any points and, you know, Corpus Christi was doing enough just to kind of hang around. It wasn't a total blowout. I mean, they played them tighter than I think some SEC teams did this year. Those made threes in the first half, starting 8-for-11, made a huge difference. And then kind of allowed them to go to their bench in the second half. And, you know, the way Nick Pringle played, I don't know if that surprised me, but, you know, he comes out and has a lot of energy and kind of can bounce around and get to the rim. And, you know, he played a lot. But, you know, Corpus Christi still kind of just hung around. And they out-rebounded them in the second half. And they were 4-for-8 from three-point range the second half. They were respectable. For a 16 seed, that was a respectable game that they played.
You probably also got to see Maryland. What problems would Maryland produce or will produce for?
I'll be honest, I actually did not have a chance to get out to the court yesterday. I wanted to, but the Tony Mitchell news broke right before, during the West Virginia Maryland game, so I never really went out there to watch some play and trying to catch up a little bit today, because we were about to talk to, you know, Maryland players, coaches right after this. But you know, I obviously a different team than what it was 2 years ago with Mark Turgeon being gone and Kevin Willard coming in, and me being a guy who follows Providence, I follow the Big East. I follow Kevin Willard at Seton Hall. His teams definitely play hard. It's kind of a hard-nosed coach. And, specifically to the personnel, though, it's hard for me to say what exactly what will affect them quite yet, but I'm trying to catch up to speed on that one.
So can you catch us up to speed on the other story that you were working on? What's the latest?
Tony Mitchell.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, that's another one where, man, if I had some time, I need to try to talk to his attorneys and see their side of it. But it doesn't look good. And this is different. You think last summer you had Eli Ricks get arrested for marijuana. You might remember in Mississippi where he got pulled over. That was one joint. And that charge got dropped. And you know, I think there's rightful, why he got arrested in that case in Mississippi. You know, there's probably questions that are legitimate there. This is different. This is a large amount of marijuana. If you saw the picture, pretty big, you know, shopping bag. There was scales. There was a loaded gun without a permit that his passenger had. There were stacks of cash, and they're being charged with intent to distribute, which is certainly a more serious situation, just, you know, a possession charge. So I don't think the two situations will be handled the same way. Obviously, nothing really happened with Eli Ricks as far as Alabama. I would not be surprised if Tony Mitchell gets indefinitely suspended. If something like that, he reached out for a statement. It hasn't come yet. I don't think it will come probably until Saban does his press conference Monday night after the first practice. But it's, you know, from a legal standpoint for him, it certainly seems like he's in some jeopardy. And then, obviously from Alabama's standpoint, I think it's something that they're going to take, I don't say not lightly. I don't think they took Eli Ricks' situation lightly, but I think it's a different situation than that.
Did you have, and you may have been working on either the Miller Show or your post game or whatever, did you have a chance to see much of Auburn? What did you think?
I unfortunately didn't see them as well. Yeah, I was writing post game, but they're limited. I mean, just from watching them, the two games they played Alabama this year and a little bit of other times, like they're not what they were last year with Jabari, and they don't shoot the ball well unless Wendell Green gets hot like he did against Alabama for a little while. I don't know. Houston's beat up with the Sasser injury, and they've had another player go down. Like, it's possible maybe in front of your home crowd they can pull that off. But to me, the biggest question tomorrow is going to be how the crowd is for both games. Are there Alabama fans cheering against Auburn? Are there Auburn fans cheering against Alabama? It's one session. It's one ticket. They're all going to be in there. Mm-hmm. So that's the biggest question to me.
It'll be interesting, but I think Alabama fans are pulling for Auburn. They want Houston out of there.
Kumbaya.
Now, I don't know about Auburn feeling about cheering for Alabama. That's probably not going to happen as much. I don't know. I'll tell you who will, and that's Mike Rodak, and we'll talk about it next week with him. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you, Mike.
You got it, guys. Thank you.
Great stuff, as always, from Mike. Yeah. Love having him on.
Mike Rodak from AL.com. Coming up, we're going to go cruising again. The Smokey Robinson way. No, the actual way. On Big Noon Sports.
From T-Town to the Plains, this is Alabama's most in-depth analysis on the SEC. This is Big Noon Sports.
Hey, everybody.
Hey, this is Reagan, owner of R&R Cigars, the Cigar Mansion in downtown Tuscaloosa, located at 2703 6th Street across from the Home 2 Suites. Come down to R&R and see why we're the ultimate cigar and bourbon experience. With over 165 bourbons and 5 private barrels, our selection of bourbon is unmatched. We have the best cocktails around, and our cigar selection is legendary. Our lounge and service are world-class. Come and experience the luxury of the mansion and see why it's a world-renowned cigar and spirits destination.
That song on a cruise line.
Maybe
your wife is a significant other.
Oh, wow.
You're not breaking up while this is playing. Let's just put it that way.
No, but once the song ends, you might.
Or when you get back landside. Because Christian went on one and enjoyed it. We was talking about it earlier. We were talking about the cruises, the Crimson Tide cruises. And Ellis wanted to add or had a question for Big Noon Sports. Hey, Ellis, how you doing today?
I went on a Crimson Tide cruise.
Oh, did you? What year?
Yeah. It was year that Calvin Ridley and Jonathan Allen and most of the 92 national championship team was on there.
Yeah, that was the 2019 one, I think. I think that's the one I was on.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well,
wow, you're very memorable, Christian.
Yeah, well, it was pretty awesome, needless to say. First time I've ever been anywhere like that.
Did you see Christian Miller dance?
No, I didn't. I know one thing, though, when they got in the open water, the casino opened up, and that's where everybody went.
Yeah, there's a lot of pictures. I was just on the website for the Crimson Tide cruise. There's pictures of guys gambling with fans in there. So, oh yeah, that was where all the fun was at. Obviously, you know, I didn't have much success, but man, like everybody was in there having a great time.
So, what was your favorite part of the cruise?
Just getting to see all of the players. And every one of them was just nice as can be, you know. You'd walk up to them and say hey to them. You know, I wouldn't bother them, you know, like if they're with their family or something like that. But, like, you know, that cornhole tournament, you know, they had that. Just amazing time.
Yeah, I got a picture of the cornhole right here.
Yeah, I went riding in a Jeep with somebody, him and his wife, and we went until the electricity just stopped.
Oh, wow.
The lines just stopped. There went no more.
Whoa. You were out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, way out there. Truthfully. But it was pretty amazing, like I said, getting to see all of the players and doing something that I ain't ever done before. You know, everybody says you get sick. I didn't feel that ship move.
Yeah, Christian was just telling me that during break.
It's almost like
I'm prone to seasick.
Well, I had the band on that presses on the acupressure.
It's like a magnet.
Acupressure thing. Yeah. Well, it's it presses in certain areas. Then there's a thing you can put behind your ear. But I mean, I also go deep sea fishing, so I was kind of used to it. But it wasn't even anything like that. It really just felt like you were just
on a condo.
You were on a condo. I mean, or in the mall, because again, this thing is like several stories. There's stores you can go, you know, buy whatever in. I mean, it looks like a mall at one area. Then there's a casino area. Then on the back, there's putt-putt, basketball courts. I mean, there's literally anything you can think of. The pools,
everything,
New Orleans,
and all the food that you can eat.
That's exactly what I told them.
If you want to lose weight, you're going to the wrong place.
That's right. Yeah, we'll see.
If you want to lose your date, you're going to the right place.
Yeah, unfortunately that. But the food was great. I mean, I was telling Lars, like, anything you can think of, different, you know, all types of varieties of food, free ice cream anytime you want it. Like, there's ice cream machines, there's vending machines.
I got a weakness for ice cream.
Oh, man.
2 or 3 o'clock in the morning if you wanted ice cream or pizza,
right. Yeah, Ellis knows. Hey, that's right. Go get it whenever you want. That's right.
Ellis, if you don't mind, how much was it for a fan to go?
I had a friend that won the cruise pack off the 100.9 the game. It was Ryan Tyler Show, won the Crimson Tide cruise.
So you went on Tide's dime.
Yeah,
it didn't cost me or him nothing.
That's the best kind of trip to take.
Yeah. Did you go anywhere fun when you were in Cozumel or Yucatan? Did you do any cool excursions? I think you mentioned the Jeep. You went and rode on the Jeep.
Went to one place. It was way out. It was like underwater, like caves.
Oh, the caves, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you can see the bats are hanging from the ceiling and all that, you know.
Yeah, I didn't trust the caves. I didn't go to a cave. I did. I rented a Jeep. It was the craziest thing. These guys were just sitting on the street, and I was like, "How much? Cuánto cuesta?" Like I was, and just got a Jeep. Just gave him. I can't remember what it was. Just handed him some cash. He just gave me the keys to a Jeep.
You didn't have to go through budget, rent a car, and sign your life away.
No. I mean, he looked at my license, and I was good to go. Actually, I had to leave my license, and I was a little skeptical about that. But other than that, yeah. And I was like, wait, don't I need this to drive? He's like, no, you're good. And luckily, I grew up driving like manual, so like it was a manual Jeep. I'm just driving this manual Jeep around the island, just going wherever. It was so cool.
When I was like 19, went to Mexico.
Yep, snorkeling. I did go snorkeling.
And just on a beach in Mexico, my brother and I asked this guy, he had scuba gear, and he was just like, yeah, give me this much money. No lesson, no nothing. We went scuba diving. Took us out, we only went like about 25 feet down. So in case.
But you had never put the mask and the oxygen on?
Nothing. There's no regulation.
It's dangerous.
But I only went like 25 feet.
Wait, scuba diving or snorkeling? Cause it's
scuba diving.
Oh wow.
Yeah. Now, snorkeling.
But if something would have gone wrong at 25 feet, you're not going to get the bends if you shoot up.
Okay.
Right?
But you could use the breathing apparatus wrong and just suddenly suck in a fish and a bunch of ocean water. That's what I'm impressed that you could do that.
I went with, he had two little old containers of moonshine.
Of course.
And he had a set of Liberty overhauls on. And he's just an old country boy. And he had them stuffed in his socks all the way down there around his ankles and had them taped on there so they wouldn't fall out. They went all the way down just about where they're about to touch his ankles and said, okay, you're free to go.
Wow.
So you went on this cruise with Junior Sample.
Yeah.
Does anybody know who Junior Sample is? Oh, he's the guy on
Heat Hall.
Yeah. Good. Thank you, Alice. He was a hee-haw guy that wore overalls all the time. And
so you snuck moonshine onto the cruise.
Yeah, he did, not me.
Did you sample the moonshine on the cruise?
Oh, yeah, I sampled it.
Was it flavored?
No, it was straight.
Oh, God.
Oh, the real stuff.
Gasoline.
Yeah, the real stuff.
Man, you gotta stay away from open flames with that stuff.
Yeah, Dill Jr. had some of that in his trailer once, in his hauler once, and he gave me some, and it just destroyed me.
You can take about an ounce of it, and about 15, 20 minutes later, you're looking for a place to sit down.
Yes.
I remember.
Just a sip is all I wanted.
That's all you need. You feel it all the way to your toes.
Yeah.
I mean, what is the proof on that? Like 195?
Yeah, it's like 180, something like that. I mean, it's as close to absolute 200%, 200 proof, 100% as you
And
need.
I live in Tennessee, so I can get. All I wanted it. All I'd have to do is call some person and they'd bring it to me.
You know, the best place to sample moonshine. You know this, Lars. You know what I'm going to say?
I don't know. The Nick?
Talladega.
Oh, Talladega. Yeah.
I mean, it's everywhere. You go back out in free parking and they. Now, a lot of this stuff, and some of it is store bought, you know, because now they make moonshine to sell in liquor stores. But a lot of it's flavored.
Yeah,
like
it's
apple
not the, it's
pie.
Not the real
that's why
that's
asked,
not. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now that stuff's good to sip on and drink. You can have more than one. But like what Ellis is talking about, that'll mix you up.
Yeah.
Well, I've tried some homemade flavored ones. Huh?
Yeah. Now they can do that too.
Yeah.
Yeah. How'd that work out for you?
The taste is actually pretty good.
Yeah. I'm not gonna lie. What was it flavored with, like berries or something?
It was some type of like apple or something. But I think it had like a cinnamon stick sitting in there or something.
You put like cherries in a bottle of moonshine and then take and eat the cherries. It don't take too many cherries.
Let me tell you, they serve those things at certain places in New Orleans, and they're called cherry bombs. And the place right across from Pat O'Brien's serves them. And I asked the bartender, they drop all these maraschino cherries into a vat of pure grain alcohol and soak them for 3 days.
Mm.
Yeah. And you do one, they taste, still taste good. You pop one, you go, okay, God, that's great. And then you do two or three more, and next thing you know, you don't know where Pat O'Brien's is. It's so potent.
And, well, when I was in school, in college, we would make a WAP. Do you know what a WAP is?
I don't know, but it sounds like you're about to get us in trouble.
Yeah, well, it's you dump a bunch of Everclear, which is 190 proof, into a big jar, and then you just put a ton of fruit in it, and you let it sit for 3, 4, or 5 days, and then you drink it, and you can't even taste the alcohol. I mean, it is frightening.
Yeah, I'd imagine. So, you know what WAP means nowadays, right?
I don't.
Oh, it's just it's a slang. It's a racist term.
No. There's another one.
When we get back, I don't want to share it on here. I can only imagine.
I apologize if I misspoke.
No, the intent.
It's
an acronym for a song, but what it stands for is actually kind of funny. It's I'm not going to share it on air.
We'll see what we do on this. Hey, Ellis, we'll see you on the cruise.
Thanks, Ellis.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thank you for every talk.
All right. What a good guest. And boy,
that's the longest call we've ever taken.
Did he spawn a lot of different to talk? Did he not? He's a topic maker. All right, we'll wrap this show up on the other side of the break.
From T-Town to the Plains, this is Alabama's most in-depth analysis on the SEC. This is Big Noon Sports.
Hi, I'm 100.9 Tuscaloosa weather.
Rain continues this afternoon, turning colder with temperatures falling through the 50s. For tonight, mostly cloudy, sharply colder, below at 33. And tomorrow, mostly cloudy, breezy, and very cool, behind the middle 50s at 54. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 51 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
The best sports talk in the state. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
Alright, this is the actual music from that song that Christian was talking about. I'm not even going to say the acronym anymore.
I'm officially horrified.
I'm not.
All my students will know what it.
I'm so sorry, guys, to introduce you to today's society. That's unfortunately what people listen to now.
That's an individual decision. That's fine. But, you know, I think when it's all said and done, we just blame Ellis. Move along.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Although
I'm pretty sure Ellis is with me. He's never heard that song.
Absolutely
or the
not.
Meaning. Although I've kind of heard the beat, so I think it's probably been on a background somewhere where I've been.
Definitely.
So anyway. And you said it was kind of an anthem for a while.
Man, it did seem like it. It was like the hot girl anthem, man. They loved it.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
I guess I see why. And I guess I don't see why. We'll finish things up with a couple of topics here I thought I'd drop on y'all, mainly because it's in our wheelhouse as far as broadcasters are concerned. You've been watching Greg Gumbel, right? With Barkley and Clark Kellogg. They do a great job. By the way, I was watching Barkley yesterday. He just cracks me up. He's so funny, so quick, and so honest. And he was talking about all the grief he'd gotten with picking Alabama. And he says, you guys don't know how much that hurt me to do. And he was being serious. But anyway, Greg Gumbel has announced that he is going to step away from the microphone as far as the NFL broadcasts are on CBS. But not going all the way out. He's going to stay with the NCAA stuff. I think I would do that too, because and nothing against the NFL guys, but this tournament is something special.
Yeah.
Well,
you know what? I will say back to Barkley real quick, man. I'm sorry. I respect that because he's one of the few people that will go on air and he just says, you know, exactly how it is. He's not afraid to step on toes. He's just honest. He's one of the few people that I feel like will actually just go out there and just speak his mind and be honest. And he's not afraid to go against the grain.
No.
Especially, you know, a lot of his opinions, you know, are not necessarily, they don't line up necessarily with mainstream media. And he doesn't care.
No, he doesn't.
I love that. Even though he's an Auburn guy, I got so much respect for him on that.
I mean, just to pick Alabama.
Even
you know
that.
What? He set everything aside. I'm going to pick the best team. He thinks Alabama's the best team, so go for it.
He spoke to Alabama's team, actually. Did I tell you all that?
Mm-mm.
He came and spoke to the team.
When you were there. What was his message?
I don't remember, but it was, you know, one of the, you know, the like fall camp speakers, you know, bringing speakers. Yeah, he came and spoke to Alabama. I'm sure that probably felt awkward for him, but.
You know what? Well, Charles, you never know. I'm not sure anything makes him feel awkward.
I think money will, you know, influence you. You know, if Auburn said, "Hey, Christian, we'll pay you, you 30 grand to come speak to the team," I put on a T-shirt. I'll say,
your love for the almighty dollar is greater than your love for Crimson.
Wait, no, I love Crimson.
Oh, come on, you. No.
Come on. You wouldn't put on an Auburn jacket for $30,000?
I played an Auburn golf tournament. Wore a damn shirt. I didn't care.
That's right.
You know, I'll say War Eagle. It doesn't bother me. Jay Barker will not say War Eagle.
Doesn't matter the
call.
Wow.
Now, Jay's pretty motivated by money.
I was about to say, he's a financial guy.
If you stack some bills in front of him, he might do it.
I think he'll do it.
No, money can change the complexion of a lot of situations.
Lars, how much would it take for you to diss Nebraska? Somebody gave you $30,000
right now.
Yeah,
you wouldn't have to struggle
easy.
To do
that's,
it.
That's low-hanging fruit right there. I do believe Matt Rhule is going to turn it around, though.
You think so? I hope so. I don't have the greatest relationship with him, but I hope he turns it around.
College football.
Okay. Oh wait, this is worth exploring.
College
here.
Football needs
this. It's not worth it.
Just
say that.
Go ahead.
You and Coach Rhule didn't see eye to eye.
No, it's not. It's not necessarily that. I just and you probably could ask a handful of guys that played for him professionally. I don't know how you know in college, but. Just the way he kind of did things, number one, he tried to bring college to the NFL. That's never going to work. And everybody knew that. You know, I mean, he even brought his own chef, like the nutritionist lady, like the cooks. Like he tried to bring Baylor to Carolina.
Mm.
Just wasn't happening. But no, there were just some kind of shady things. He was not the most, I hate to say this, He was a little shady. I mean, he was not
my first pick to be head coach of the Nebraska Cornhuskers. That's for sure.
Yeah,
but maybe the from Baylor to the NFL and now back will make him an even better college coach. I don't think anybody could doubt.
He's following the path of Nick Saban.
Oh.
Although he hadn't won a national championship in college.
Saban's a big mistake.
Well, I played for both. He is nothing. He is not Coach Saban. Not close, no.
Saban might still be in Miami.
But there's a lot of guys who are great college coaches that just don't pan out.
Steve Spurrier.
You know,
Lou Holtz. Lou Holtz went to the Jets and was 3-11, and they fired him in the season.
What is it easy to sum up why these different college coaches didn't make it at the NFL level?
I can only speak on him just because I played for him, and it was exactly what I was saying initially, is that he tried to bring his college, not just his system in terms of, I'm not speaking specifically on schemes and, you know, on-field stuff, just the way he approached it. You got to remember, in the NFL, you're coaching grown men. Right, like yeah, you have some, you know, younger guys on the team.
Procedure.
Right, but you can't speak to 30-year-olds with kids the same way you speak to 18-year-old college, you know, athletes. You can't run it like you're not going to be respected, right? And ultimately, another thing where he messed up was he tried to get rid of those vets because they butted heads because again they just weren't on the same page, and try to bring in young guys that he felt would buy into his process.
Mm.
Listen, in the NFL, if you want to win, you know how you do that? Talent. It's a fact. Why did the Rams go win the Super Bowl after they brought in all those free agents? Because they had the talent. They had better players. I don't care if you get guys to buy into your system in the NFL. You ultimately have to have talent. The guys with the most talent are going to win. That's how the NFL works. And then, unfortunately, I think that's where he kind of messed up.
This is definitely a conversation worth continuing. I'm fascinated by it.
I wanted to ask you something, though, as we roll out for our, was it Friday already? Who else off the top of your head has been one of the speakers at Save and Bring That, other than Barkley?
I want to say David Goggins might have spoke to us, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
It's Kobe. I heard Kobe did a Kobe, long, long
Kobe did. I asked him a question, actually.
What'd you ask him?
About leadership. You know, how do you get guys to buy into your leadership? And we're running low on time, unfortunately, but we can carry this on Monday.
Yeah, let's go Monday. Hey, y'all, have a great, absolutely.
Have a great weekend, everyone.